Imagine a composer at work. Do you picture a tortured soul with wild hair, playing a piano with one hand and scribbling on notation paper with the other? Dan Deacon's not like that, except maybe for the tortured soul bit. Dan Deacon composes on his laptop. His orchestra is any existing sound that catches his ear. He manipulates, he lengthens, he modulates and reassembles any number of found sounds into his own mesmerizing compositions. Dan Deacon's new album is called Glissriffer. That sounds like Dan Deacon's Learn to Play the Indian Tablas, right?
No, it's a bunch of slices and samples that I resequenced into that pattern.
Turns out, Dan Deacon is a bit of an audio alchemist.
Yeah, my music's always been, like, very rooted in, like, the sculpting of either pre-existing sounds or synthesis. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with this record, I kind of revisited, like, micro samples. Like, my favorite thing to work with is, like, just like a like a really short sample, a little bit larger than granular synthesis, which is like zooming in on like one cycle in a pre-existing waveform and then making synthesizer sounds out of that.
Like a note, or I mean, mixing visual with audio, but like a pixel in a way of music.
Exactly.
Do you get around the copyright issues? You can just use it if it's that small?
Oh, I would consider it fair use because it's completely recontextualized and a new derivative work is made, and there's no way to tell we should really not talk about this. This is a nightmare. I am actually like expecting the emails that were like, oh, we've identified the micro samples you were discussing.
Oh, yeah.
Keep thinking about how we're immersed in media, but it's still like illegal to use. Do you know what I mean? Which is crazy.
What some of the early, you know, rap samplers went through when all of a sudden a lot of their music became illegal.
And copyright law is getting more and more strict. You can exist in two ways. You can either be like remarkably wealthy and then license whatever you want, or you can be really obscure and no one's going to care. You know what I mean? Because you're not going to enter into their like, well, we can litigate them for millions. Because we talk like this and I'm pretending to type on a keyboard that doesn't exist. But if you're anywhere in the middle, collage becomes difficult.
This album, you know, it's layered and deep the way your music has been, but it feels like there's a lightness, maybe a happiness that wasn't there before.
I don't know. I'm glad you hear it. I was very stressed out on making the record because it was the first time doing it in a long time by myself. And when you enter that process, you become the only ears in the room. And then self-doubt can really, like, emerge as, like, a key player. And I kept thinking, like, are these songs like tomatoes that I grew in my own garden where, like, I, like, remember, like, putting the seeds in the ground and, like, patting the dirt on top and then, like, seeing it sprout and then, like, growing into an adult plant and then picking the tomato and, like, slicing it and I'm eating it. And I'm like, all these memories are attached to this taste. And my friends are just like, oh, the tomato's gone. Are there more tomatoes? Because you don't have that attachment to the memory. And I kept thinking, like, is this music something worth sharing, or do I just like it because I'm making it?
Well, it's funny hearing you express that anxiety because, you know, well, one of the themes of this album is stress as much as there are themes about it. And that,
oh yeah,
you know, learning to relax. I understand that there's a great story behind that song, Learning to Relax.
I was doing what I thought was relaxing, but was actually just killing time. I was on Facebook and a friend of mine posted a video from the Toronto Film Festival of Bill Murray talking about his approach to acting, or his philosophy about life, I guess. And it just completely blew me away because he said,
you can do the very best you can when you're very, very relaxed. No matter what it is, whatever your job is, the more relaxed you are, the better you are.
And to me, this was just like, kaboom, what are you talking about? Oh my God, I forgot that word even existed. Because I very much was a person who was motivated by stress. I would use a deadline as a motivator. And I think a lot of people do that, where they're like, oh, I'll just wait till the last minute, and that'll like light a fire underneath me, and I'll get it done, and I'll do it. And I just kept thinking, like, well, that's a terrible way to live. Like, why am I just like building a house and lighting a fire in the basement just to see if I can like finish the roof before it burns down my whole house? And everything sort of came to be, and I started realizing how important it is to truly relax. And in relaxing, to be bored. You have to be bored. If you're not bored, your mind is never going to wander. And if your mind never wanders, you're never going to get lost in thought. You're never going to find yourself thinking things you wouldn't have otherwise thought.
I read a while back, tell me if this is wrong, NPR helped you get a gig with Francis Ford Coppola?
It did. I believe it might have been this exact program. I was talking about how music can exist in multiple forms. I was talking about how you can morph something after it's set, that with music you can record something as a document, but then perform it live and completely and radically change it, either on a macro or a micro scale. And I guess Francis heard this and emailed me, which I thought was definitely not really him. I thought it was one of those things where you've inherited a fortune of a king and I am the, I need to get, so it seemed a lot like that. It was like his email was like a series of letters and numbers. And I was like, what is this crazy email? It's like, oh, I'm Francis Ford Coppola. I'd like to work with you. So I was like, sure, Francis Ford Coppola. Like very wary about writing back. And then I started realizing it was real. And it was a really, and I've been wanting to score films for a long time because it's fun to write music outside of your own universe. I guess my favorite part about it was just talking to Francis about technology and how like both of our art forms exist because of technological revolutions that happened prior to us, that we kind of like got to exist, like how people were like felling trees to like put down crops that now we're eating the fruit of. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I keep
thinking of film technology and music production technology.
Exactly, electronic instruments in general. And I keep thinking that we're there again and that like we're on the cusp of a new art form that doesn't exist, that isn't music, that isn't sculpture, that isn't film. The same way that like there was a time before photography. There's so many new ways to like expand upon the current technologies, make new art forms out of them, and I can't wait till like 20 years from now there's this new thing. And maybe this is already happening now and I'm just too blind to see it, but I don't know. I think there's a new form of music out there that's gonna like bud off of music and become its own thing. I don't remember how we got to this tangent, but I think about it all the time, as you can tell by my like 45 minute ramble about it.
That's Dan Deacon. His new album is Glissriffer. If you'd like to hear more, go to nprmusic.org. Dan, it was really fun speaking with you. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. The pleasure is all mine. Sorry I rambled so much.